Good evening and welcome to The Debate. Tonight we are joined by West Ham Vice Chairman Karen Brady and a former West Ham striker in Craig Bellamy. Sadly, they didn't work together. That could have been interesting. So we will kick off with West Ham. £43 million spent so far, but how close are they from signing William Carvalho for a club record fee? Everton have completed the signing of Gylfi Sigurdsson today, but is it simply how much you spent to get into the top six? How would you deal with so-called problem players? I'm sure Karen and Craig have very different experiences of this one. And should there be a minimum quota for homegrown players in a Premier League lineup? That's our poll for tonight, and we'll be looking for your questions too. This is The Debate. So, Slaven Bilic is that rare breed of manager who says he's happy with the signings he's made so far. He said, I gave the club four targets, they've come in with all four, but has he finished yet? As we said, William Carvalho could be a new club record signing. So, is it about to happen? Only one person to ask, that's Karen Brady. Is it?
Well, my chairman handles all the transfers and the negotiations, and he's working very closely. I mean, it's very complex signing players. I mean, you think...
Why?
Well, you think you make a decision to buy them, but there's so many various different layers and actually getting it done and doing it in the time frame that you want is not always possible. But I know that they're working very hard on it.
Do you understand why fans are frustrated that they don't understand the process? It should be fairly simple. You want player A, you've got the money, offer, done.
I think that on the face of it, seems like the way it should be done, but very often it isn't. And there's very many moving parts.
How many more players does Slaven want? Have you got a feel for what more he's looking for?
No, I think he's happy. I mean, one of the things you have to remember that you bring players in, but actually retaining the players you've got is also another part of the equation. So keeping the squad together, holding on to the players that everybody wants, that's another part of what happens in the summer. It's not just buying, it's also retaining.
Breaking a transfer record, though, is that a statement of intent?
Well, look, you know, we're ambitious, we want to win things, we realise we needed extra players in the team, the manager's identified who they are, the money is there, the chairman's working very hard to bring them in. All of our ambitions are for West Ham, but we can't put on the football boots and play the games and score the goals. So we have to rely on other people to do that, and that's where the money comes in and the negotiation and the tactics and, and the way it all works is very important.
The part you can do is the signing of the players. So I'll come back to you second on this, if I may. Craig, I want your opinion on the news that broke on Monday evening that at the next Premier League meeting, the Premier League clubs will discuss a proposal whereby the transfer window closes before the season starts, i.e. Premier League clubs cannot buy any more players. They can sell, even if they don't want to. They can be forced into a sale, but they cannot buy. Do you think this is a good idea?
I don't believe it's a good idea. Just for the teams... If you're looking at Premier League teams who are competing in Champions League with a realistic chance of then going on and winning the Champions League, this will harm them. This will have a
Why?
Problem. Because, well, the European market, they're still going to be allowed to go and sign players. So your best players, so say, for instance, like just I'm looking at it now, for say Liverpool didn't qualify for the Champions League now. And say it was closed, the window was closed, but then there's a few of their players want to play in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. They can't quite do it now because Liverpool haven't qualified. So they got Champions League ambitions, but because our market's finished now, but one or two other teams that have qualified, have also got through the group stages. Now they have extra money to spend because now they can, because they're already in the Champions League. That gives them a better chance of getting your best players. Mm-hmm. So I can definitely understand why a lot of clubs in the Premier League would want it shut. Would why you know that's this is your team now on you go, but for me the problem would be that. If the European market was still allowed to go and buy your players, there's going to be a big problem for the Premier League then. Unless we then shut in the European market, no one could then buy your players. And we, you know, certainly we can't buy and sell, but also the European League, they can't go and do it. Then it would make sense.
They've got to be in line. Which way will West Ham be voting on this?
Well, actually, we'd started debating this in about March 2017 at the Premier League, and 17 clubs were broadly in favour of the window being
17,
closed.
So
yeah, broadly in favour.
Substantial.
Broadly in favour of the window closing. And I think the main issue is that it protects the integrity of the squad. You know where you are. You know you can't buy anyone else. You have to get on with it. The players know that. And very often when the window closes, only really the peripheral players who are not in the team are the ones that move around. So you're not in... And most of the clubs that would want to come and buy the players from you, it's only the really big clubs in a few of the countries that can afford to come and get your star players, and very often they don't succeed. I mean, if you look at who's spending all the money, £1 billion already been spent this summer in the Premier League. It's the Premier League spending the money. So it's mainly, I think, for managers and for the supporters to know... This is the team, this is who we've got, these are the squad numbers, on we go.
But is there also an argument, though, to say your club was trying to qualify for a European competition, you won't necessarily know your budget until you know whether or not you've qualified. Would that not hamper your decision-making?
I don't think so. I think that, in reality, you already know what you're going to do, what positions you need and how you're going to do them. And actually, there is always January if you need to go back into the market. But I think, in fact, the integrity of the league to start, to close the window before the season starts, I think is the right decision.
Is there anything else you would change right now with the transfer system?
Lots.
Give us your top 20.
I'd start with agents. No.
Why?
I think. Well.
Joking aside, what have agents done wrong? You use them when you want them.
Well, I mean, I don't deal with them. My poor chairman has to deal with them, and I can tell you it's incredibly stressful. And there's lots of people that, you know, want to come into the market that purport to represent players that don't, that, you know, are working behind your back, so talking to players about other clubs that might be interested, turning their head, talking them out of deals, talking them into deals, talking you into deals. It is perhaps one of the most... A lot of supporters don't realise just how stressful that whole period is. I mean, my chairman is working 20 hours a day, getting very little sleep, taking phone calls morning, noon and night, and always doing all of that to try and improve things for West Ham. And it's an incredibly stressful situation.
I mean, do you agree with Karen? Would you feel for the chairman in this scenario, or isn't that part of a chairman or an owner's job?
It just comes back with it. You have to deal with agents now. And I'm sure West Ham would have done on many occasions, if they're looking to sign a player, they would...
Yeah,
they would just go through the agents.
I understand what you're saying, but you could say there's a degree of hypocrisy there, because there are certain agents, when you've targeted players, you've worked with that agent to get them out of another club to get them to West Ham.
Well, if you actually took all the agents out of it and clubs dealt club to club, then that would eradicate all of that problem. But, I mean, there are some good agents. I'm not saying they're all terrible. But what I'm saying is that the player's agent, you know what job he's doing. It's the others that are around it that are interfering in your business and telling players, this club's interested, you should be earning that, you should be doing this. And that's not always in the best interests of the player, and certainly not always in the best interests of the club.
Are you glad you had an agent?
Yeah, I am, and I always feel I was very fortunate with the agent I had.
Who was your agent?
It was a man called Steve Horner. He was head of Reebok at the time, but then went on from there, and he was just a close friend of mine.
Yeah.
But always gave me the right advice.
Yeah.
Listen, I made the decision. He never told me what to do, when to do it. I made the final decision, but he was very clever in dealing with an individual like myself who was headstrong at certain times. he would try and give me the right advice. He knew sometimes I'd listen, sometimes I wouldn't. But the relationship we had, even when I didn't listen and I got it wrong and he knew I'd get it wrong, it was never, I told you so. It was, we moved on, off we went. But he was a good man. He understood me very well. But listen, we have to deal, even from our young age, dealing with young players at my job now. I have to, you know, we have 13, 14-year-olds who get approached by agents, who get approached by giving them boots, approached by tickets to certain games. So we have to clamp down on that as well from that younger age, where they go straight to the parents.
But at the same time, imagine if, I don't know, a family member of yours was a good footballer, a young man, and you didn't have experience in the football world.
When I talk about agents, I'm not talking about players' agents.
Yeah.
If a player has a really good agent, they're working in the best interests of that player. They're looking after your well-being, they're looking after your move, they're making sure you earn the right
money.
And they need advice, of course they do. I'm talking about the others that are around it, that are not actually associated with the players.
Has that scenario got much worse?
I think it has, because I think the, you know, the payments have got bigger, the money's got bigger, the interference has got bigger, and everybody's trying to cut in on everybody else's deals. And very often you don't really know who you're supposed to be dealing with.
Well, everyone wants a part of this now. Everyone, because of the money now that's in football, to qualify as an agent now, you don't really need to do much. Where before it was a little bit stricter, now it's got less. So now everyone out there is looking at, from younger ages down, because there's money to be made. And unfortunately, that brings in a lot of the bad people as well.
Yeah.
A lot of bad people who haven't got the players' interests at heart.
And you know, if you're talking about a young player, for example, a young player is better to stay... is not to move to Manchester City, and this is no disrespect to Manchester City at all, and I don't mean it.
For example,
where it's obvious they're not going to get straight into the first team, they're much better staying at a Cardiff and working their way up and playing their football and enjoying their game and making a reputation for themselves and playing in front of the crowd. That's all part and parcel of becoming a footballer.
And that's, we use the Dele Alli effect.
Yeah,
that's what we use as a football club is, and many football clubs should use it as well. Where he learned the trade, he went to MK Dons, played at a very young age, learned men's football very quickly. You watch how he plays, very streetwise.
I understand.
And then
that.
He went straight to the top. And when he goes, you go to a club like Spurs, when you go to a club like Arsenal, you go straight into the first team.
But it's not.
And there's also
not...
sorry to interrupt you. There's also something else you have to think about. If you take a very young player and you give them an extraordinary amount of money, that in itself is a very difficult situation.
Who for?
For the player. If you're a teenager and you're being paid an extraordinarily large amount of money, that can really interfere with who you are, what you do, who you surround yourself with, how you spend the money, and that can ultimately be one of your downfalls. It's all about making the right decisions at the right time for your career, not just for the moment.
I understand completely what you're saying, and the morally you're correct, but by the same token... you wouldn't say, OK, well, at West Ham, we wouldn't go after a young player and pay him big money when there's other clubs in for them, because you wouldn't be competitive, would you?
No, but I think you have to be mindful of everything that you do. And if a young player has a really good agent...
Even if that means missing out in this current almost race we're having?
Well, Spurs do it. They won't pay over the odds for a young player. They won't give them silly wages where they know the other players can get elsewhere. They let them go. And I would, if I had a young player and his parents asking for a certain amount of money because he can get that elsewhere, and he's asking for his age at a very young age, you ain't for us. You ain't for us. And I would question whether he was going to go on and make it to a certain level. Because if he's already aware of it then at that time, where it really shouldn't be.
I mean,
you will get it in the end.
The perfect thing to do in reality with a young player is give them stability. So give them a long period of contract, pay them well, and if you put them out on loan, if the loan club will pay more than you're paying them, let them keep it. So when we loan out a young player, we don't do it to make money, we do it to further their career, which is why we pick the clubs that we send our players to very carefully. And they get the upside, so they get the money, they get appearance fees, they're earning more money, but they've got the stability and they know that West Ham's best interest is in their best interest.
OK, talking of stability and ambition, next on The Debate.
Crystal clear, I am nowhere near wealthy enough in football now to compete with the likes of Man City, etc., not just Man City, where basically it's a wealthy individual taking on what is equivalent of countries. I cannot and I will not.
Craig, what did you make of what Mike Ashley had to say?
I like Mike Ashley. I've said it on numerous occasions.
What do you like about him?
I like him as a person. I like the way he does business. He's successful in every business he enters. My time at Newcastle, I sort of got to understand the position they were in as well as a club.
Mm-hmm.
When he went in, you know, obviously they had a remaining debt, but if you look where they are now, they're much more healthier as a football club than they've ever been. There's a lot to him to thank for that. But at the same time, I get what he's saying as well.
Well, I mean, what he's basically saying is, I cannot compete with billionaires. Do you have sympathy with him? Are you in a similar position yourselves?
Well, I know exactly how he feels. I mean, we all do. Like Mike, my two chairmen who own the football club, they're British businessmen. They pay their taxes in the UK. I mean, if you think about the money that... I mean, he mentioned Man City. They spent more on their defence than Bosnia and the Congo. You know, I mean, you're talking about hundreds of millions of pounds. It's incredibly difficult to compete in that kind of environment because you have a duty to the football club to ensure you don't bankrupt it, and you also have ambitions that you want to chase, and finding that really fine line between risk and reward is difficult.
How do you find that balance? Because you know supporters and to a degree your own players and manager will see who's spending what they've got coming in, and then we think, well, hang on, where are we in this race?
Well, you have to be clever. You have to be cleverer, because you can't go and spend £100 million on a player and you can't give them £300,000 a week, because you just can't. So you have to be cleverer. You have to look into the market. I mean, if you think what my chairman and my manager have done in getting Joe Hart on loan, for example, that's a clever piece of business. If you think about the players that they've bought and what they've spent, I think they've done clever business, and you just have to be that bit cleverer, because even if you went to one of these players and offered them what they're offering, you know, very often they'll just offer more, and you end up, yeah. You just can't ever get, you can't get ahead of the game. But so you just have to scout harder, negotiate harder, find some hidden talents, and have a mix and match approach to it.
But should that, will that lessen the ambition, not the ambition, but realistically what a club like West Ham can achieve?
Because, well, look at Leicester.
Yes.
I mean, Leicester didn't do the things that Mike's talking about, and I know that everybody thinks that's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, but actually what wins trophies is good footballers winning matches. And it's not always about the money. A lot of it is about the money, but a lot of it is also about getting the right players, motivating the right players, having that team spirit, having the right facilities, and just a bit of luck.
But what owners got to do as well, you've got to protect the football club. Safeguard, and even in a championship, do you think they're all chasing? They all want to be in the Premier League. It's very difficult to get into it. So what do I do? End up spending money we don't have, putting the club in big risk just for chasing that one dream that might get us there. Usually it doesn't. And then the club then drops down the leagues again. And then the supporters who wanted to be sold, who wanted all these players in, who wanted us to show ambition, we're now supporting a League One, League Two club. Mm. You've got to be careful of what... Like, Manchester City, and there's one or two other clubs as well, they have wealth, which is just incredible. The game's changed now in the Premier League. It's changed. It's gone beyond now. Before it was Abramovich, and even he's finding it. Now, if you can't compete with the likes of Man City. Now, at the same time, other clubs as well, and what you know, you have to be very careful of as well, and a club like West Ham, is that we don't get carried away with what's going on elsewhere. Because everyone's spending 50, 60, like the transfer market this present moment, I know I said it last week, it's just gone crazy.
Well, PwC brought out a report last week that said the average transfer fee by 2025 will be 100 million. I mean...
Well, where's that going to leave you? I mean,
well, if it's average, we'll probably be doing very well, I would say. We'll probably be paying.
But seriously, though, to compete, really compete, and not just say the right thing and say we're ambitious and we want to be clever, do you need to partner up with a billionaire or an oligarch? Do you need new invest? Is it going to get to the stage where you have to have somebody as part of your investment group or ownership to compete?
I think it depends on how quickly you want to do it. I think if you're building, growing, improving, I think that's what the supporters want to see, that you're giving it your best. And I think that that's important. I mean, a couple of things that we do, we meet with various different supporter groups all the time, and we are very open and transparent about what we can do, what our ambitions are, how much money we've got to spend, what we're trying to do. All of our waking hours are all about the best interests of West Ham and doing the things that they want to see happen. But actually, being English, paying your taxes in England as a businessman, my two chairmen, they're a dying breed.
But also, as you're well aware, fans, they want success today. And even with your best efforts, there will be a large quota of your fans who are dissatisfied with your efforts, and they want to be up there alongside Manchester City. They want to be up there alongside these teams. That's the pressure you're under.
Yeah, but I think that they also... I think they trust my two chairmen, they trust where the club's going, and I think they're prepared to give them time. They have very good relations at our football club. You can't please everybody. I mean, that's impossible. No. You try and please everyone, you end up pleasing no one. But we're doing the things that we think are right within the means that we've got, but we don't have money that comes out of the... in an oil field and we just send it over in a truck. It is a different scenario and we don't have one of those billionaires. And maybe if one came along, maybe my two chairmen would have to think about it. But at the minute, they spent their whole life trying to own West Ham and now they've got it, they're not going to part with it.
Craig, signing of Gylfi Sigurdsson today.
Yeah.
Good signing. And what do you make of the sort of, as we were just talking about, the sort of money that Everton have spent this summer?
they're trying desperately to break into the top four. It's going to be difficult for them even still, even with the money they've spent.
Are you impressed, though?
He's a very good footballer. But, being from Wales and living in Wales, it was a deal that could have got done 3 weeks ago because Swansea then held out for more. But at the same time, 3 weeks ago, they got offered £45 million for him and turned it down, thinking they were going to get more. They haven't. So it's 3 weeks now. It's gone a little bit longer for Sigurdsson, gone a little bit longer for Everton. Now, Swansea are running out of time as well because they need to spend that money. They need to strengthen their team to stay in the Premier League. So I was a little bit disappointed with the handling of it. But Everton, they're definitely showing ambition. But they have money. They have a new owner now. You know, they've had money pumped into the club as well, which can give them that opportunity of being able to spend. But it's still going to be short of what the other clubs are able to spend.
OK, still to come on the debate. Should there be a minimum quota? Should there be a minimum number of players who make the Premier League starting lineup who are homegrown?
Club know what we need. This is not so complicated because I believe it's all the Fulham supporters know what we need. But where we're talking about names, I don't have any important decision about choice the names.
Wow, Slavisa Jukanovic, very plain there. What do you make of that, Craig? He has virtually no important say on any players coming in. And he's the manager of Fulham.
No, I disagree with that. That can't be... look, a manager should have a say in assignments, but...
This is general, needs... not just Fulham. I don't think he's alone in those.
No, I'm sure a lot of it... Look, abroad, there's a lot of directors of football and they do a lot of the signings. They bring in the players in and then the coach or the manager gets to work with those players. Over here, we've always been the manager picks his players and the manager identifies which type of players he wants to sign and then usually he does... You know, the club obviously do the deal, but he's identified the player. The player that's come in has come with his decision. But at the same time, I like the idea of a director of football, and I have done now for the last couple of years.
Managers don't.
Of course they don't. But I like the fact of where they deal with the owners. So as a manager or a coach, you then concentrate on the team. I can identify a player, but work with you. You deal with that side, the business side of it, and whether it's possible or not. We have a plan A, plan B, plan C. So, if there's a left-back, we need a left-back right now. But at the moment, I've got a 17-year-old left-back who's coming through in the next couple of years. He's going to be a really good player. Does it make sense then for me then to go and... If I'm not aware of that, I go and sign a player who's 25, 26. And then I go and bring this player and spend a lot of money on him, but I'm unaware of this player coming through. Then at the same time, this player ain't going to get his opportunity to go and play because we've got a player already in his position. So... with a director of football gives him the opportunity because managers is very difficult to have a view on everything because he ain't going to be able to see the youth system during that time because he's in a short period himself. He has to concentrate on the first team.
Does your manager have the final say?
I think what Craig says sounds perfect, but it just won't work in reality. I'm quite surprised to see the Fulham manager say that because surely he must have worked out what his role was before he took the job. It almost seemed as though it came as a surprise to him that he wasn't going to be allowed to pick the players. I mean, there are some managers, and normally the better the manager, the more strong they are on who they want, who they employ, how they play and the decisions they make. There are some managers who... want the job, to have less experience, who will take whatever terms the board say. You can't pick the managers. We all have a director of football. The chairman makes the final decision. And there's no right or wrong way. It just depends on how you work together, I think, and whether you both accept that situation. Yeah. In an ideal world, collaboration is the best, because the football club has to find the money. The football club has to find the money, and they obviously want the player to be worth the money they're spending, although there's no science to that. And the manager has to work with the player. So, in reality, if everybody agrees, that's the perfect way.
Yeah, but how often does that happen? For instance,
quite a lot, actually.
Well, somebody like Slaven, he's got to think about his tenure at West Ham, not a player that will be good in the first team in 4 or 5 years, because he will get hired or fired on first team results.
Well, that's why he makes predominantly all the decisions. There is a separate budget that my chairman uses to buy younger players that are not immediately required for the team, but they are for the future. And I think that works very well. I think it's an impossible situation to say to the manager, you can pick the players, and the board actually pick the players. So there you start off already unfocused on what the job is.
Do you accept such other
stakes? Or alternatively, buying players the manager doesn't feel he wants or doesn't want to work with.
No.
You give the manager the job. Yes, his stakes are high. Yes, he's paid well. But actually, it is his career. It is his life. No manager wants to get the sack. No chairman wants to buy the wrong players.
No.
So actually, to have the working relationship, I think the most important person at the football club, without doubt, is the manager. Because if he sets the tone of the football club, he sets the discipline, he sets the attitude, he sets the way forward, and your job as the board is to help him be as successful as possible and interfere as least as possible.
So you accept, for instance, your four signings you've made so far have an average age of around 30, so you need players that are Premier League ready?
I think you need a mix and match. I think that, you know, we've had I don't really get involved. My manager and my chairman work very well together. They've realised the immediate issues that are in the team, and they've gone for experience. They've gone for stability. There's always room for younger players. I mean, we've got some great young players. I mean, Declan Rice, 18, played 30 minutes against Manchester United. Didn't look out of place. We've got Reece Burke, Reece Oxford and Josh Cullen all coming through. That's, you know, the supporters love great players, but nothing is better for them than the pride and satisfaction they get from having a young player coming through the academy into the team.
With young players, though, coming through, there's going to be inconsistency. Yeah. Of course it is. They're not going to be able to perform to the highest level week in, week out. It's impossible. So we have to understand, we have to accept that. So if you're a manager and you're going to play a young player, it's going to be inconsistency with it. But it's very difficult for the manager to give that young player the opportunity and let him play through it, let him get better, because he might not be around to see him become the best player.
Have you ever been at a club, a Premier League club, where it's clear the manager isn't buying or selling the players?
No. I've seen once or twice. It was my period at Newcastle where the manager was having less of a say. When players were leaving, it wasn't through the manager's wishes. And one or two players came in after the manager, even my conversation with the manager was, we're not signing him, I don't want him. And then 2 days later, the player came in. So it became clear to the players then it wasn't the manager making decisions then.
If the chairman's making the decisions on his own, it's because he doesn't trust the manager's judgment. And that is fundamentally wrong before you even start. I mean, my two chairmen and I have been in football.
As soon as the players see that.
Yeah. I mean, my two chairmen and I have been in football for 24 years. And in that entire period, we've only sacked four managers. And that's because, as I said previously, the most important decision you make is who the manager is going to be, and you spend your time and your investment working with them and helping them help you achieve the ambitions from your supporters. This is not a battle of egos, it's not a battle of wills, and if it does become that, it becomes
very toxic. Do you spend that much time as well when you're signing players?
Well, I don't spend hardly any time because that's not really my area, but I'm sure my manager and my chairman certainly do.
Yeah.
Okay. Next up on the debate, we're going to be discussing.
We ain't going to sell our best players just because, on the cheap, just because somebody wants to sign them or even they want to go home.
So-called problem players. Now, Slaven Bilic there last season, referring to Dimitri Payet.
Yeah.
I'm sure you remember it.
hometown certainly do. And actually, you can see the pain etched on Slaven's face. I mean, it's a really incredible and difficult situation when you bring a player in, they're really important to the team, they're playing very well, supporters love them, and then they go and break everybody's hearts, all the supporters' hearts, young and old, when they say, I'm not playing for you anymore because I want to go. And, you know, whilst we tried very hard to take a really tough view and say, we're not selling you, we're not selling you, we're not selling you, and I think supporters admire that stance, you cannot underestimate the effect of having an unhappy player in the dressing room, and it becomes incredibly toxic. And the only thing you could do, I mean, you can't treat grown men like schoolboys. The only, you know, the only situation you have to do if you can't change their mind is you have to get the best amount of money. I mean, we sold him for 250% from back to the club we bought him from. So in reality, one could say a good bit of business, but actually it's bad business, because what you really want is you want the player to stay, you want him to play, you want him to achieve his ambitions, but he's got form in this type of thing, and eventually you just you have to do what's best for the team.
And that's what I was referring to about doing your homework. Look, everyone in football knew Payet. He was an outstanding footballer. He's been on everyone's radar for a long time, and even when West Ham signed him, that's a good bit of business, but I'm not sure it'll work because of his form. He have one or two very good seasons, and then he wants to go. But then he'll look to move.
Do clubs need to show, if you like, a bit more backbone? So I don't care how much you sulk, I don't care how much you kick up, I don't care how much you moan, you're staying. You've signed a contract, you're staying.
But you can say that, but what effect will it have? If the player is toxic in the dressing room, he won't play, all you're really doing is you're having this battle of wills and battle of egos. If the player says... I mean, the thing is, what a lot of people don't realise is football clubs are unique. You don't make anything, you don't manufacture anything, you don't produce anything other than more footballers. All of your assets are people, and with people comes quite complex situations. Dimitri Payet had all sorts of reasons as to why he wanted to go home, and he set his mind on it, and he said, I will never play for this club again, and I don't care. Fine me, do whatever. And they sit back, and it becomes very difficult for the manager, very difficult for the club, very difficult for the dressing room. And no matter how much you plead or beg or promise, we gave him everything he wanted, everything he wanted. He had new contracts at the drop of a hat, private planes to take him wherever he wanted. We tried everything. If he doesn't want to be there, you can play tough, treat him like a naughty schoolboy, make him go and train with the under-18s and try and bully him, but it just doesn't work. It doesn't work, Jeff.
Could they have done anything else?
Not by the sound of that, no.
Did you ever kick up because you wanted to move?
No, I wouldn't say I kicked up. I'd let my feelings known to the manager.
And it was sulky? Did you ever strop?
No, it was... I enjoyed football too much for that. I remember speaking... It happened at West Ham when Tottenham Hotspurs and West Ham.
This is under the previous West Ham ownership.
And Man City were looking to buy me. So West Ham and obviously were in certain financial circumstances during that period. And I remember speaking to Gianfranco Zola, going in speaking to a director of football at the time, Nani, and just saying, well, look, this is a good opportunity for me. They understood that. But at the same time, they were trying to get the best price for them. And I understand, it was fine with me. And I was honest, honestly, it was completely fine.
But is it happening even? It just seems as though it's happening even more now. It used to be the odd occasion, you know, Pierre Van Hooijdonk 20 years ago, it was incredible news. But now, I mean, this summer, it seems at least half a dozen, and they're nearly all star players.
But it seems
clubs.
The clubs can go and buy them now. Where before, I'm not too sure, apart from, at Spurs at the time and Manchester City would have paid, anyone else would have paid 14 million for me during that period. But now at this, you know, if you look at 14 million, there's players and championships going for more now. There's every club now in the Premier League can go and buy your top players. And if they can go in, and at that time now, so you look at the Van Dijk, the knock-on effect of that, going on to maybe with Liverpool, now Liverpool, Coutinho. The interesting fact with those two clubs, the owners have come out and said he's not going. Mm.
Well, Southampton chairman has said today, after announcing their new Chinese investment, he said the new owners are very keen to stress, we will not be selling Virgil van Dijk. Mm. He is going nowhere. Do you watch that with interest, or do you think that's it finished?
Well, I think when you're new in, you want to make a statement and you want to say all the right things. But when you don't really understand how difficult it is for the manager to have that toxic situation, and it just becomes a statement because you want to say it. And I think supporters admire that, but actually the reality is very, very different. The reality of having a player who does not want to play for hanging around is.
I understand that, and that could be a problem. Of course it can, but I'm also looking, say we talk about Coutinho, we talk about Van Dijk. I'm looking at these players now and saying, okay, you ain't going to go. But by the way, there's a World Cup in the summer.
We said all that.
What are you going to do? So you're going to.
We said all
you're not going to play. So then your chances are then, even being with us, you're going to have to play. Because if you want to represent Holland in the World Cup, if you want to represent Brazil in the World Cup, you're going to have to play well. So it's going to have to be with us. And I guarantee, Coutinho will anyway, but I guarantee with Coutinho, because of that Brazil national squad, going to Russia, being in the World Cup, if Liverpool, I don't believe, will sell him. What I've found out with people inside Liverpool, they ain't going to sell him. It's not going to happen. And they've made their mind up on it. I think Jurgen Klopp would do the business, but I think the owners are not getting involved. They're not.
Maybe the clubs are fighting back, as we're suggesting. Yeah.
Coutinho now, all right, he won't be happy now for the next couple of weeks.
Look, there's not one rule for everything. You have to take each individual situation and try and resolve it to the best of the ability.
Well, let's hear Arsene Wenger, what he said today on Alexis Sanchez, because he was quite clear.
At the moment, no, because we have not progressed on that front, and at the moment he's a player who goes into the final year of his contract and prepares for the season.
Are you really saying you'd let him walk out for nothing in a year's time?
That's a consequence of what I say, yes.
Now that is interesting, Karen, the way it's going financially. Clubs happy to let players run their contracts down and lose them for nothing.
Well, I wouldn't say they're happy to let them run their contracts down, but you don't have a choice. If the player won't sign a new contract and you see out his contract...
You can sell him.
Well, they could do, but you'll notice that he said twice, at the moment, he's not going anywhere. Right at this moment, he probably isn't. But I think from Arsenal's point of view, they have to think that what could they achieve with him in the final year as opposed to what will they get for him? Because you won't get the full value with only a year to go. You just won't. So as long as Arsene can manage that, and I'm sure he's an excellent manager who can, then that's fine. I mean, it's not fine from the club's point of view, from a finance point of view, but actually if it works for the manager, works for the player, and he won't sign a new contract...
If they get into the Champions League, it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's worth it. And like I said, going back to even... He's got a World Cup to go to as well. I'd keep him and let him go for free next summer.
OK. Next on the debate. Should there be a minimum quota for homegrown players? Yes or no? We'll be discussing our Twitter debate. So, 18-year-old Declan Rice got half an hour at Old Trafford at the weekend. But really, should there be a quota of three homegrown players in the starting lineup? Lovely idea or fanciful?
I have to say, a lovely idea, but fanciful. I think Premier League clubs, the stakes are so high. It's the best league in the world, and it's the best league in the world because it's so competitive. You'd want the players that deserve to be in the team, regardless of their age, regardless of whether they're homegrown or not, to be starting every week. And I think these forced quotas, they just don't work. I mean, in reality, it's all meant to help the English team, but what you really want is players that are good enough to play in the Premier League that also play for England. That's the game.
Well, we've had the results of our poll in, and perhaps unsurprisingly, the results are 68% of our viewers want there to be this quota. Mm. So now, we may not deride it as fanciful, but if that's what fans want to see, shouldn't we be adhering to that?
You're
an under-18 coach, so...
it'd be a dream for us, and I'm sure every academy coach...
Same rules for every team.
I just can't see that. Look, it makes sense, and I believe it's something that lower league teams or even to the Championship should all try and agree. But I can see the Premier League or Premier League teams being able to be involved with that because, they want academy players, and we all love homegrown players playing in your team, but at the end of the day, if you're not getting success and your team is so important for your team to be competitive in the Premier League, you want the best players.
Yeah, I mean, West Ham was the last team to win a European trophy with 11 British players, 8 of which lived 2 miles or born 2 miles from the ground. It'll never happen again. It was 1965. Yeah. It won't happen again.
Well, Celtic,
because the
Celtic
game has changed.
No, maybe they don't have to be born round the corner, but homegrown players, which don't forget, it's a player who before his 21st birthday has been 3 full seasons or 36 months at a club. So they can be foreign by birth, but they constitute homegrown players.
But the point of the Premier League is the competitive nature, that the 11 players that start are the best 11 picked by the manager to compete in your shirt, playing for your club to win that game. You can't have that reduced by 3 because you've got to fill some quota that you actually don't know where that quota is going to end up. Because if they're not good enough to play for your team, but they're there because of the quota, they're not really good enough to win anything for England. So the whole psyche of this has to be reversed. We want to win things in the Premier League, but also win things in England. And I think that takes the simple idea of making a quota is not going to change it. What it's going to do, it's going to create a secondary market, as yeah. Craig was saying, in younger players.
Well, perhaps another reason for the desire is there enough of a pathway for players?
It clearly hasn't been the case for a lot of clubs. And that's not just Premier League, Championship, lower down as well. It's just not been... I've got to be careful of what I say, because obviously I'm involved in an academy. We have to make it clear for younger players that it's a realistic opportunity to break into our first team. So we have to create a pathway. By that, it means playing players up, exposing them to a higher level of football, but different age groups. So we're having under 13 playing under 15 football at times. I was involved. I took the under-18s. We had a 14-year-old starting. So just not every week, impossible to do it every week, but expose them that way so they can see that there's an opportunity for me to go and play under-18s football next week. There might be an opportunity then in a couple of years' time, then he can go into 23s at the age of 16, which we try and do quite regular. But we have to get players into the first team. That's the message we've been
giving. Yeah, I think that's right. But that's what the players want as well. I mean, the academy is so hugely important to West Ham. We spend millions and millions of pounds on it every year. We're just going to invest another £3 million in building a better facility for them.
Is it worth it? Is it paying dividends?
Yes, I think it is. I think if you look at Declan Rice, you look at Josh Cullen, you look at Reece Oxford, you look at Reece Burke, you're seeing the talent coming through. And I can assure you, if those three players, English players, local boys, were in the team, it would make everybody very proud and very satisfied. But it has to be on merit. It can't just be because there's a box you have to tick.
OK, we did say we would invite questions this evening. We have a small problem with some of our graphics at the moment, but I'm aware of some of the questions that have come in on Twitter. Karen, I've got to tell you, overwhelmingly, from West Ham fans, they are pretty unhappy with the fact that you've got 4 away games to start with. They said, when you took the stadium, you made a promise that West Ham would come first, so how come 4 away games to start with?
Well, when we signed the contract in 2013, we were aware that the IAAF was going to happen this summer. And I think I have to say what a fantastic event that it was. And I'm sure London and the whole country were very proud to be part of it. And that's part of the legacy. It's a once-in-a-lifetime situation, and it's the only time that our games won't take precedent. We've reversed the middle fixture, so we've reversed with Southampton, so we end up with 3 Premier League games away, and obviously the Cup game we've reversed as well, which Sky are going to show on TV. I think it would be an excuse to say that that's going to affect the team. I mean, Slaven said we have to play everyone anyway, which order we play them in doesn't matter. By the end of September, we would have had 4 away games, 3 home games. And you think about March, we've got 3 home games in a row. But we do understand the supporters are not happy about it, but it was already in the diary for the stadium, and we asked the Premier League's permission before we signed the contract to be able to have the fixtures reversed in 2013. But it is a one-off.
So you don't feel in any way that you've hoodwinked your fans, and you can face them a clear conscience and say, look, this won't happen again. this is an anomaly this season.
Yeah, and it does happen. I mean, Liverpool had to do exactly the same thing when they were building the main stand. There are always circumstances that you have to deal with, but this is a one-off. It's a once-in-a-generation, once-in-a-lifetime. It's part of the legacy of the stadium. I think it was a very good event. The manager says it's not going to affect his preparations and it's not going to affect the team. The waveform's pretty good, or was pretty good last season. So I think it's one of those things, but it won't happen again.
OK. Question for you, Craig. Who is the most problematic player you ever experienced sharing a dressing room with?
Problematic player?
You can't say yourself.
You know me better than that.
And what makes a player a problem?
No,
We're not talking about disliking someone's personality. What does a disruptive player do?
Look, he can be in... It can be many ways. For me, I always... The only problems I ever really had with a player was professionalism. What time he came in, mm-hmm. how he trained, how serious he took it, how he played, all those type of stuff. Does he do everything right to give himself the best opportunity to be the best he can on a Saturday? And if I found a certain player was not... I found it disrespectful towards myself, because really, you know, I seen players with miles better ability, but I seen them at the same time abusing what they had. I mean by that, by, you know, there'd be times I knew they were out. I knew they were out on a Tuesday night, then they'd come in Wednesday training, and it was just not at an effort. And then Thursday, it was just a knock-on effect. And as players, when you see that, I found it heartbreaking. But probably the one player, I quite liked him as a person at times, but I found with all the ability he had, which was astonishing at times, was Robinho. He just let me down, really. I just felt he was such a top player, but it was just Man City at that time. The feeling I had for him, he was too big for Man City at that time, and as players who were with him. We were lucky to be with him, and that was a real disappointment for me.
I suspect I know the answer to this, but a question for you, Karen. What advice would you give Liverpool with regards to Coutinho?
Well, I don't think Liverpool will be looking for my advice. I mean, they've got some excellent people that work there. They'll be making their own decisions. But, I mean, the thing is, to whatever decision you come to collectively. I think that's the most important thing. And that's the key to running a successful football club, when the supporters, the board, the manager and the players are all pulling in the same direction. Great things can happen. And we saw that at Leicester.
After what we saw at the weekend, only one game in, Paul Pogba, if I said to you... Well, as we've had a question come in, could he win the Ballon d'Or?
This year? No.
Do you want to expand on that?
In a couple of years, maybe. Maybe. I think Manchester United fans got to be happy with the start. Got to be delighted with that start. At the same time, with Paul Pogba, Lukaku. But I see Lukaku in the next couple of years. I see Paul Pogba in the next couple of years... nailing down his position, becoming an all-round central midfielder, and then he had a chance. I think at this present moment, this season, might be a little bit too early for him.
OK, 15-second answer. What is success for West Ham this season?
Well, I think continuing to improve. I mean, we'd like a top-six finish. We'd like to do well in a cup. There's lots of things we'd like to do, and we're focused on doing them. But I think just that everybody enjoys the season and the team play well, and if we finish in a top six, that'll be real success.
OK, well, thank you both very much for your company. Let's have a look at what's coming up on Sky Sports. It's at Liberty Stadium at the weekend. Now, definitely no Sigurdsson. Swansea host Manchester United, top of the league as we speak. Then the Toon are at Huddersfield for their first Premier League game at home. Chelsea visit Tottenham, or they don't, they visit Tottenham at Wembley. And then the Monday night football returns for Manchester City against Everton. Tomorrow night, Simon Thomas is in the chair. The debate will be with Paul Merson and Mark Schwarzer. So that's all left for me to say is thank you very much indeed for your company. Thank you to you both. We'll see you again.
Sky Sports Premier League. Feel it all.